The Guardian.
A weekend wobble for the Tories has Labour in fight-back mode. Could there be a final twist in this election? With less than 3 weeks to go until polling day, we're here with you every weekday lunchtime.
We'll have the sharpest analysis and the smartest commentary from around the country as Britain prepares to decide on June the 8th who to put in Downing Street.
I'm Owen Jones.
And I'm Jonathan Friedland. And we're joined in the studio today by our friend and columnist Zoe Williams. Hi, Zoe.
Hi.
And remember, today is the last possible day to register to vote. So if you haven't, press pause. You can hear our dulcet tones afterwards and follow the link on our podcast page. Now, we can't not talk about it, the dementia tax. Now, we can officially call it the dementia tax because the Financial Times has splashed it as such on their front page. I think that more or less qualifies. And also, the Conservatives have bought Google ads talking about the so-called dementia tax. So it is officially the dementia tax.
Now, it has to be said, as we sit here in the pod, word is coming through to us that this policy has been, at the very least, U-turned, maybe completely dumped. But Theresa May has said that there's going to be some kind of cap on it, softening and toning down the policy, because obviously it's been causing huge backlash for Conservative candidates on the doorstep. So now it won't be a full, unrestricted raid on old people's wealth because this notion of a dementia tax has proved so politically costly. But just the phrase alone, Zoe, I mean, it is politically deathly, isn't it?
But then when you round them up like that, you do think, hang on a second, any amount of money for anything will always be affixed to some kind of word that makes it sound much worse than it is. So I wouldn't, just because somebody calls it a bad name, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a bad thing. This just happens to also be an incredibly bad policy.
Well, it puts them on the defensive because, I mean, with the poll tax, the Tories always had pulled their hair out. It's the community charge. They'd lost the argument. As Ronald Reagan says, when you're explaining, you're losing. So just so we're all clear what this dementia tax is. So basically, if you get cancer, you've got the NHS to look after you. If you spend years with dementia, your care costs will be levied through inheritance tax de facto. I mean, it is astonishing. As defenders of progressive inheritance tax, well, I certainly am, this was never, obviously, the sort of policy that we would ever argue for.
Inheritance tax could be the last gift the baby boomers could give the rest of the country. You know,
they certainly owe plenty,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, they really do. And they've had a great run and it shouldn't be beyond their imagination. But obviously, for that to happen, A, it has to be levied on everybody. And B, it has to be, we have to use it to socialise the risk. There's no point having these kind of swinging taxes.
But it is, isn't it? It's that disparity between if you get cancer or if you get dementia. That's the politically toxic bit here. Because the idea in principle of saying that if you need social care, you could get that from your own assets. That's something they probably thought when they were planning this in Downing Street, this would be fair. This would people would welcome this.
Well, yeah.
Rather than having it as a gift of huge bequests you can give to your kids, it's fair and it's more equal. As it turns out, it's this disparity between the two.
And also, I think there are lots of people who, if you simply said to them, inheritance tax is going to be very, very high, but it's going to be high for everybody, would stomach it. It's only the idea that you won't have anything to pass on to your children because of your disease, and your neighbour will be able to pass on their estate to theirs.
If they drop dead.
If they drop dead. And it turns everything, and it makes the stakes so high on what is a really horrible disease anyway.
But what is interesting is it does have cut through. People are saying, on the doorstep, this has that doorstep cut through, as the expression goes. And I suppose the Tories, their view was, look, this is in the bag. We're going to walk this with a stonking majority. We have an absolute total lock on older Britons. We can more or less do what we want, abolish the triple lock de facto, means testing for winter payments.
Winter fuel allowance.
But it's not, it doesn't seem to have worked, does it, in that sense?
What I think is really interesting
in terms of the polling
is that, you know, we moan and moan about the right-wing press and how influential they are, but actually it shows that they're not that influential after all, because the Daily Mail didn't come out and say this is an absolute outrage.
No, they cheered it.
They cheered it.
Despite what they would normally do. All their normal instincts would have gone the other way.
Exactly. The Mail on Sunday called it the dementia tax.
Okay, but the fact is that the Daily Mail does not command these crowds and tell them what to think. People are thinking, independently of the Mail, this is an absolute outrage.
But I think Owen's right that it came about because they're sitting there not drawing up a manifesto to win an election because they thought they'd already won it.
Yeah, yeah.
They're drawing up a manifesto much like you would draw up a budget, thinking we're going to have to find the money because we're going to be the ones doing it. We're going to be in government. And this is a way to fund it. And I bet you they thought they would get some support from the sort of Polly Toynbee left because they would think taxing an asset, land and wealth, and against an inheritance tax, what's not to like? But they just didn't think through the politics of it, which is funny because they are roaring ahead politically and yet they've made a political error.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Labour's opportunity because we've seen, in terms of the polling, actually, in terms of obviously it's narrowed, and one of the reasons is actually Labour's support has become even greater amongst the under 50s. But that partly that is because they will be the ones who will suffer also the consequences, because if their relatives need caring needs, they won't get the assets passed on to them. But equally, there does seem to be a slight erosion amongst older voters. So Servation overnight had the Tories going down by 5 points and Labour up 4 points.
Oh, really? So what were the final figures on that then? 41-35?
It's 35 for Labour and 44 for the Tories. So
and
that's
the point is, it's the gap, isn't it? It's a 9-point gap seems so small and so there's been some talk, you know, some people getting very excited, thinking, right, it's on. The gap is narrowing and who knows, Labour could even win this thing. And there have been surprises in recent years with, so it said, Brexit and Trump and even Cameron getting a majority in 2015. Do you think this is just a wobble and it will pass, Zoe? Or do you reckon this is the beginning of a Labour astonishing turnaround?
There's quite a lot going on, isn't there? Because it also depends on how much the student fees stuff cuts through, because you know that is life altering.
We're going to talk about youth later, so we'll get onto that, whether
or not this is game changing. I think that the problem for the Tories will be if it fits in with the narrative of the kind of people voters think they are. So I think not only do they seem kind of, you know, stab myself in the hand because I'm so hard, that gives a kind of insight into the kind of government they'd be if they did have the majority that they think they're going to get. And I think that has given everybody the chills a little bit. The kind of carelessness and the repudiation of the socialised risk principle is another thing that people kind of associate with them and they've demonstrated. And also, I think all the kind of financial instruments that would surround this dementia tax and the kind of people who would make money out of it, the kind of people who would make money out of designing the instruments to get your asset wealth before you actually died, it gives people the heebie-jeebies. They think we're really going to be in the hands of hedge fund managers and bastards.
But it'd be interesting. I mean, I think what we'll see now, Lynton Crosby won't so much offer a dead cat as two dead pumas and a dead cheetah.
Well, clearly, whatever other calculations were at work, Theresa May and her team decided they needed to dig themselves out of this hole and indeed to change the subject, which, as it happens, is what we need to do. And so we'll be back with a different topic after this.
Now, before we get onto Johnny's topic for the day, we've got a question here from Tim. He's got in touch through Guardian Witness. Now, it's a question many of us have been asking. Why are we having a general election? Zoe, why are we having this election?
Well,
tell us.
It should be completely obvious, right? This is the best possible time. If Theresa May had left it till 2020, the chances are that Labour would have revivified. They would have had another leadership contest. They would have had they would have a better picture of themselves as a different kind of party, and she and all the Conservatives and indeed most of the commentators and most of the country believe that if she'd had a more competent opposition, she would have been on the run. That's the calculation. I don't think it's a bad calculation, and I think I've never ever seen a party go into an election with such certainty of their own victory. I think the question is why she didn't do it straight away.
Well, there's also wages have started to be squeezed again. Brexit negotiations, how will they pan out? Possibly not that well.
Yeah, I mean, I think she went for it, didn't she? Because she just thought, now's a chance I can massively win.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's like a team facing an open goal. Now's the time to shoot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they thought Corbyn is so beatable. Now's the moment. And I think that's the sort of, if you like, the positive reason. The negative reason is they thought, what on earth is coming down this track? And to go into an election after Brexit negotiations, which could mean a really unpalatable deal, and to have to go to the country then and say, we've got this deal and it looks awful, now vote for us. It was a much less propitious opportunity.
And imagine going into a general election with a terrible Brexit deal against an opposition leader who was much more full-throated in their opposition to Brexit in the first place. Then you'd be basically having a kind of existential election about
And notice it's not the one thing it isn't about is the thing that she says it's about, which is I need a mandate because I had all this opposition in Westminster. That wasn't definitely what it's not about. Now, I want to ask something about the youth vote, because part of this sort of other side of the wobble story, and we were talking about dementia tax and our older voters shifting away from the Tories, could that that happen. But the other story of this election has been these very good numbers for Labour generationally among 18 to 24-year-olds. And it's got this kind of visual form over the weekend with Jeremy Corbyn addressing that crowd there to watch, see the Libertines at Tranmere's football ground and just, you know, a Jeremy Corbyn chant. He seems really popular among younger voters. Is it going to be enough to actually turn around or just affect in a big way this election?
Well, I mean, the generational shift is astonishing because in 1983, according to Ipsos Mori, the pollsters, Margaret Thatcher's Tories had a 9-point lead amongst 18 to 24-year-olds. According to...
No, get out.
Absolutely, 9-point lead. Yeah, you went all...
Those of us who were around at the time find that very hard to believe.
Not all a bunch of rebellious youthful hippies. Now, maybe you were, but they weren't, many of them. Now, according to the latest YouGov poll, Labour has a 33-point lead amongst 18 to 24-year-olds. Now, arguably, well, it's just demonstrably the case, a generation has become more of a dividing line in terms of politics than social class. Now, but what's interesting, of course, is the age-old thing is Tories have an absolute lock on over 65-year-olds.
Well,
they turn
did.
Out to vote.
Yeah.
Only 44% of 18 to 24-year-olds voted last time. It went up by 20 points in the referendum. What do you think, can, with tuition fees and so on, can they mobilise them?
Hang on a sec. So 2 million people have registered to vote in this election period, right?
How do we mean? What do we mean by young?
No, I don't know if they're young. Oh. It's just that those are the numbers on the people who've registered to vote. Yeah. But I think we can assume that they're younger than they are old.
There are statistics on the website. You can see every day the age breakdown.
Oh, okay. In that case, look on the website. Don't listen to me. But let's imagine that there has been that surge has been mainly youth. The truth of it is, and I think that they're really missing this. I heard John Humphreys quizzing Angela Rayner on the Today programme, and she wasn't brilliant on the tuition fees plan, to be honest. She just sounded very defensive. But parking that, it is absolutely life-changing to whether you come out of university with 50 grand's worth of debt or don't. So nobody going into that election, 18 to 24, is going to think, oh, well, how exactly are they going to, have they costed this? Have they offset this against the student loan potentiality? How have they done this? Where are they going to get the money? They're going to think, this could actually change my life.
Don't you think that the problem Labour will encounter is a horrible kind of scepticism about politics in general? They'll think, they'll have a vague memory that there was a promise to abolish them altogether in 2010, and Nick Clegg, you know, signed his name in posters, etc., and everyone saw them, and then they didn't do it. And I wonder if there'll just be some scepticism about that, allied to the fact that even, you know, with the best one in the world and the greatest optimism of the young, they'll be thinking Labour is not going to win. What difference does my vote make? That's the worry I would have if I was relying on.
But I would say to that, if you were going to say people are going to just go in sceptical because politicians break promises, why don't conservative voters go into an election thinking, hang on a second, the Conservative promised to halve the deficit, they promised to keep us in the single market, but the proposal
about tuition fees and Clegg, that is almost an iconic broken promise of recent politics.
But I think that's the Lib Dems' broken promise and not tuition.
No, but okay. I mean, just a self-flagellation on my part. In terms of on the left, sometimes we indulge just anti-politics populism sometimes. But the problem with that is there is a lack of faith or confidence in politics as a vehicle to deliver change.
Yeah.
And that, whether it be the expenses scandal, that doesn't help when it comes to these sort of eye-catching radical policies. What's interesting about this policy, though, I think it's twofold. One, in terms of the housing crisis, because home ownership amongst younger people is plummeting under this government. Part of the reason, you could argue, if you're saddled with huge amounts of debt,
you don't take on more debt.
Your disposable income is also lower. But the other issue, which isn't looked at enough, is one of the worst effects of tuition fees has been a collapse in part-time student numbers over 25-year-olds. These are working-class people who are trying to get a second chance. And I think that's something which needs a bit more focus.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that.
And the thing about the scepticism thing is it could cut both ways, actually. Which is among older voters, about tying these two things together. I wonder how many older voters think this dementia tax, it probably won't happen. They'll end up U-turning it, they'll dilute it, just like they did with the national insurance thing. It will sort itself out. It's not reason enough not to vote for Theresa May because she seems nice.
Weirdly, I think there's a kind of natural, even though there's a kind of natural bias towards optimism generally, I think there's a natural bias towards pessimism in kind of sceptical responses. So when somebody says something bad, when the broken promise is a bad thing, then you kind of believe that they're going to break it, and when it's a good thing, you don't believe it. See what I mean?
I do.
No, he doesn't.
Oh.
So if you think
you believe the worst,
you believe the worst, and you don't believe the best.
What yes. about, though, this thing, this hardly perennial about younger people, which is that they sort of talk a good game, and often they beforehand they register. You know, even in the American case, Obama, everyone was dreaming and getting so excited about that. And even then, the turnout was actually quite low among young people. Yeah. What is it about younger people, and could it be broken this time, that makes them actually in that category of voters among whom Labour do really well, namely non-voters? Yeah, Labour's really good with the non-voters.
I suppose part of the... I mean, this sounds like a slightly niche point, but I think it is still relevant, which is doorstep politics. In terms of getting out the vote, when you knock on doors, disproportionately it's older people who tend to answer doors. Younger people are just out having fun, you know. And in terms of mobilising them on polling day itself, it's more challenging. I think that's one issue. But I think, I mean, I suppose politics is more of an abstraction when you're not tied down in a family, in a job, in a career.
That's just, I mean, it is absolutely true. We've got these kind of tropes about who answers the doors, who answers the phones. You know, if you phone English people after 8 o'clock, they're always drunk. If you knock on doors, they're always over 60. But, you know, we have got we have got ways of getting to people that isn't necessarily at their front door now. And I think the kind of digital campaigning is going to make a big difference.
Well, on Facebook is interesting, because where the Tories were very successful last time compared to Labour was what Labour did is just broadcast the same message indiscriminately across Facebook. What the Tories did is had specific messages, adverts, policies that were tailored to specific demographics in swing seats. So if Labour are savvy now, what they should be doing is going for key marginal seats, 18 to 25 year olds, tuition fees and so on. Now, we're nearly out of time. The excitement must come to an end, but make sure you are subscribed to Election Daily. Follow us on Twitter. I'm OwenJones84. Johnny is at Friedland, and Zoe is something more awkward, but it is at Zoe SQ Williams. Do follow her. She's great.
I read that as Zoe Squilliam.
Yeah, Squilliam. It is Squilliam.
That's how I think of it.
But you could then think it was with a K and imagine.
No,
that.
You're right. I'm
imagine
not helping.
That problem.
The politics of Twitter names. And don't forget, get your voter registration in today. Don't put it off. Stop what you're doing. Go, it takes 5 minutes less, sort it out. Democracy.
But before we go, a quick bit of recommended reading. We'll link to all the pieces on our podcast page. Owen, what's caught your eye today?
So my piece is in the FT, and it's senior Tories were kept in the dark over the dementia tax. Now, I wasn't interested in this so much about because of the dementia tax, which we've talked about, but the style of leadership that Theresa May has. She is... This is going to become an issue more and more, I think, within the Tories. She has a very tightly knit set of advisers that helped her with a snap election because barely anybody knew about it. But those advisers are often seen as, well, one of them as being particularly abrasive and not conducive to good relations with the Tory parliamentary party. I think increasingly...
You're talking about Nick Timothy?
Not Nick Timothy, Fiona Hill.
Oh, that's who you're talking about, okay.
Fiona Hill has, you know, I mean, she had this big public spat infamously with Nicky Morgan, who's not on the Christmas card list of Theresa May, to say the least. But it's this very tightly knit, cliquey style of leadership, which is quite authoritarian and centralising, quite different from David Cameron, who let people go off and do their own thing, Michael Gove, etc. And I think you'll see increasing divisions over that kind of leadership.
And I was going to recommend, on very similar lines, Matthew D'Ancona's column, our colleague, in today's Guardian, which is also about the kind of inner workings of Tory high command, and is really interesting on how the Tory right, although they're keeping their lips sealed right now because they're being loyal and want to win the election, are dismayed by the Theresa May drift away from the kind of Thatcherite anti-state creed. They see her rolling forward the frontiers of the state in various ways, and all that stuff about I don't believe in untrammelled free markets. A lot of Thatcherites in the Tory party don't really like that stuff, and there could be trouble to come, says Matt D'Ancona in today's Guardian. And a recommendation from you, Zoe?
Mine is also from the Guardian, and probably also on the facing page to that, which is Gary Young's piece. It's, you know, Gary Young does such subtle and interesting Corbyn loyal pieces that they're always brilliant to read. It's actually quite difficult when you're kind of immersed in this incompetence narrative to see the positives in the Labour campaign, and Gary does it really, really well.
Excellent. So those three recommendations for you. We're back tomorrow. In the meantime, you can follow all the news and election analysis as it comes in at theguardian.com. Thank you for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.